This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
The Green Bay Packers are requesting assistance. They would like 700 shovelers to report Sunday to Lambeau Field to shovel snow.
It's the People's Republic, man.
There's a 70% chance of snow accumulation ahead of Sunday's game. So maybe this is just a psychological warfare, an element of their approach. But we bring you this Friday, this Blue Friday starts with that news. It is Danny and Gallant. Something extraordinary is going to have to happen for Seattle to win. And that doesn't mean, Paul, that I think that there's going to need to be some heroic effort. But this is not a game Seattle's going to be able to win by just going out and playing their brand of mistake-free football. Something extraordinary needs to happen, and there are two reasons I think they can get it. The first one is Russell, and the second one is Wilson. I think that I think that combination, that Russell-Wilson combination, is going to need to provide something extraordinary. Seattle can't just line it up, go out there and play their football and win this game.
Is there a difference between Russell and Wilson? Is it maybe something where he has different personalities?
Tastes great together. No, it's two last names. I think the two last name combination works better than the two first name combination.
Okay.
But yeah, I think Russell Wilson, like Russell Wilson's better than Matt Ryan.
Extraordinary.
Yes.
What other thing outside of Russell Wilson can you see being extraordinary on the field on Sunday?
They need to take the ball away from Green Bay. They don't win this game if they don't have any takeaways. Green Bay is really good at not turning the ball over. They had only 13 turnovers this regular season. This is the second fewest in the league. Seattle's pretty good at taking the ball away. They haven't done it either the past two games. But if they fail to force a turnover, as they failed to force a turnover in each of their past two games, I don't think they win this game.
Who's going to make that happen? Is it the pass rush? I feel that Jadeveon Clowney could be in for another big day just based off of how awesome he was against the Green Bay Packers.
He's pretty good.
Excuse me, against the Philadelphia Eagles. And, yeah, against the 49ers as well down the stretch. He, in that game on Monday Night Football, really showed that he can take over a game. And while he is clearly gutting through it, as he detailed yesterday, does not sound like what he is playing through is fun by any means. But he said the adrenaline can kind of get him through. That's a guy that I think is a candidate to maybe make those takeaways happen, and you guys know how I feel about Quandre Diggs. I feel that he has the potential to be a Bob Sanders kind of, well, just enhancement as the playoffs progress. He's going to need to be probably as well. But I do wonder, Danny, when you bring up, okay, get those takeaways. I think in years past, we would feel that way about a Seahawks team going up against Aaron Rodgers, in particular if Aaron Rodgers at home. But I just wonder if Aaron Rodgers still is the same guy. I watched his game against the Minnesota Vikings on Monday Night Football. He completed 60% of his passes in that game, but it did not feel that way. And we saw the season finale where he was throwing incompletion after incompletion after incompletion against the Detroit Lions and took a really long time to put them away. I just wonder if maybe you don't necessarily need to get those takeaways from Aaron Rodgers. Maybe it's as simple as just contain Aaron Jones. Don't let a running back beat you. Because with the way that Aaron Rodgers has played this season, I don't know that he can win a game for the Packers on his own, at least anymore.
Packers are at home, though, and this is the rung of the playoffs that Seattle tends to slip on. The Packers have had a week off. The Packers are healthier. And Seattle, playing mistake-free, pretty straightforward football, scored 17 points last week. And the week before that against the San Francisco 49ers, they're a couple inches from being able to take the lead in that game, but it took them scoring, would have required them to score a touchdown on each of their four second half possessions, which is really, really hard to do.
You've been banging the drum of they're going to need to score about 30 points to win this game. And I understand why, because I don't trust the Seahawks defense. I really don't. I want to, but it's just impossible to based off of the way that they have played this season. But I don't know that this Packers offense is necessarily capable of putting up 30 points. It's not something they've done a whole lot this season, and it's just different. It just is a different team than it used to be, and I think a lot of it just has to do with what we've seen from Rodgers this year. I don't know if you buy into, Danny, the idea of bad throw percentage as a Pro Football Reference statistic. Aaron Rodgers led the NFL with a bad throw percentage of 21.2%. At the very top of it. He's like in the same conversation as Jameis Winston, Josh Allen, Jared Goff, Mason Rudolph, and Tom Brady. He's thrown the ball away a lot this year because I feel like he doesn't necessarily feel that he has the ability to hit these not as good as they were in years past wide receivers outside of Devontae Adams. And he's also not as mobile as he used to be. He hits 20 to 25 scrambles for first downs over the first every single season that he's played 16 games. That's how many scrambles he's had for first downs. He's only had 9 this year. He's just a different player. Part of that has to do with their offense, but I think a part of it is also that he's 36 years old.
He is older, and watching their regular season finale against Detroit, you definitely saw it. It's uncharacteristic. It's weird to watch him miss throws like he misses them. It's very strange now. But he's not a worse quarterback than Andy Dalton, and he's not a worse quarterback than Matt Schaub.
You're right.
And both of those guys threw for yardage, and both of those guys, neither one of them had as good a team around them as Aaron Rodgers does. Neither one of them had as good a running game as Aaron Rodgers has with Aaron Jones. I've seen and watched the full length of this defense's performance this season, Seattle's defense. And the idea of saying, okay, you just go out and do what we've seen that you're capable of doing and win this game, I don't think that happens. I think it's possible for Russell to be extraordinary. I think he's been extraordinary for most of the season. He was certainly extraordinary for the second half or the first half of the entire regular season. But they're going to need that kind of game. I don't know if you can expect him, and it's not reasonable to expect him, to convert 5 third downs of 10 yards or more like he did last week in Philadelphia, but they're going to need to have some level of they're going to need to have that type of, he's going to have to do something exceptional if they're going to win this game.
It's funny that you bring that up, Danny, because the vertical passing game for the Seahawks against Philadelphia was something else, and it could have been even more if Russell Wilson had about a split second more of time at the end of the third quarter to hit DK Metcalf and give Metcalf almost 250 receiving yards on that game and 2 touchdowns. The Packers have given up as many deep balls as the Philadelphia Eagles this year. 15 pass plays of 40 or more, which is an alarming statistic. And I think that shows that even though this Packers defense has some guys that are really good players, Za'Darius Smith is scary to me, and Darnell Savage has been awesome as a rookie, but this is a team that you can take advantage of as well. And if the Seahawks can find a way to manage a pass rush like Green Bay, which is above average to good, the way that they were able to do against the Philadelphia Eagles this past Sunday, Wilson will make big plays.
They need to beat their blitz. Mike Pettine is a coach who coached under Rex Ryan. He's a guy that was going to bring a lot of pressure. What do we know about Russell Wilson? Well, he gets sacked more than your average quarterback when you blitz. About 10% of the time when opponents blitz, he gets sacked. He also beats him for big plays more than most quarterbacks. Gets the ball down the field. He's going to need to have some big plays. And I guess that's what I mean by something extraordinary. It's not like Russell has to go out and play like, that's the best game I've ever seen a quarterback play in the playoffs. They're going to need to have some extraordinary things happen in this game. I don't think that this is one where you just, hey, in 2013, you know how Seattle got to the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl by going out and playing the way you knew they were capable of playing. They just needed to stay out of their own way, not make mistakes, and they even overcame some of their own mistakes, like an early fumble against San Francisco. But it didn't take some sort of extraordinary, oh my gosh, and I think you're gonna need that type of signature play this season.
Could
in this game,
the extraordinary play come from the running backs?
Sure, yeah, heck yeah. Do I think it will? No. Maybe Travis Homer. I don't think Marshawn Lynch is deciding this game. I think that Marshawn Lynch is your sort of emotional leader, and you hope he's effective in short yardage situations, but I don't think there's going to be a 40-yard run by him that we're all talking about on Monday.
Mike Sando had a piece, and he talked to some people around the NFL, and one of the things that I guess a defensive coach, an unnamed defensive coach, had to say about the Seahawks and their offense, I think Seattle will be able to run the ball in Green Bay's defense. The Chargers did not run it well this season, but they still had success against those guys. And he also brought up the idea that since the Packers are more of an up-the-field rush team, that Russell Wilson could also have success. And I think an important injury to keep an eye on in this game is a Packer defensive lineman. We're not talking about, you know, like with Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, we know what those guys do. But Kenny Clark, who is one of their nose tackles and a guy who can generate pressure up the middle, per Matt LaFleur yesterday, he was really limited in practice with a back injury, and he's been a big part of their defensive play this season. If he's not there, that's going to put a lot of onus on the two guys on the outside, and that could lead for the Seahawks having a whole lot of room up the middle of the field.
And Kenny Clark, the guy from UCLA, who didn't practice Wednesday and, as Paul said, was limited on Thursday. The guy coordinating that defense, Mike Pettin, not sure how much respect he has, or maybe it's had, for Russell Wilson. Paul found some audio that's very interesting. Coming up at 7:30, but right now it's time to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
It's going to need to be a new coach on the Palouse. Mike Leach taking the job at Mississippi State. It's going to be hard to find a coach that brings as much success as Mike Leach did. He showed he was going to get the Cougs to a bowl game every year. And that's a huge step forward for that program. Now, he'd also reached his ceiling. I firmly believe Washington State was not going to get better with him as the head coach. This is about what you were going to get.
Whatever, Danny.
No, I mean, look, he has tremendous turnover on his staff. Like, that's a reality of Mike Leach. I think that last year with Gardner Minshew was kind of a high watermark in some ways. I don't think he was going to be the guy to get you over the top, and I think the Cougs can get a guy whose ceiling, it's possible that they might not hire someone who's successful. I think it's also possible that they might get a young up-and-coming coach who can take them to a greater height and get them back to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, and I think now it gives them plenty of time to go after targets who would be taking a step up, of course, in Ed Orgeron and Dabo Swinney. And you can focus your efforts on them as they go up to the national championship. But on a serious note, the timing of this is really unfortunate, because who are you going to be able to bring in this late in the game and still maintain all your recruits? That's, I think, the most frustrating part. And I'm very curious as to what the timeline is as far as replacing Mike Leach right now.
What to watch for.
If you're concerned about the Seahawks' offensive line going into Sunday's matchup against the Green Bay Packers, it's warranted. Mike Iupati has not practiced this week. He's very unlikely to play with that stinger of his. Also, Dwayne Brown doesn't seem like he's going to play as well with the knee injury. And with George Fant, he's been out with a groin injury, not just Wednesday, but also yesterday at practice. I'm concerned about him. Meanwhile, Ziggy Ansah, he sat out yesterday at practice. I'm not sure he plays another down for the Seahawks.
Yeah, it's not good. I'm a little worried about Fant. He's going to play. He can't not play, right? He finished the last game. We didn't see him come out.
You need him out there.
Yes, you do. Especially, I've talked myself into, hey, it's fine that Iupati's not going to play, because Jamarco Jones is playing pretty good. You need him. You can't go down another rung at that left tackle spot.
He's been good, and I mean, a groin injury, just think about the lateral kind of movements that you need to make as an offensive lineman, especially
if you're
on the left.
They're just resting him, Paul. They're just resting him.
What to watch for.
It's a bad day for the Huskies. They absolutely withered down the stretch against Stanford, losing that game. But even worse is that they lost Quade Green, their point guard, who was ruled academically ineligible. What? I thought this was a solved problem.
Use
that
a big word, Danny.
That doesn't happen anymore.
Use a big what? Washington words to
no.
Use it.
I'd like to blame the school for losing sight of its priorities and failing to recognize that the basketball team isn't deep enough to sustain the loss of a McDonald's All-American. But I'm familiar enough with Washington to say that's utterly unfair. The path is paved pretty well. And the only way you become academically ineligible as a football or a basketball player at that school is through willful negligence. Like, you have to try really hard. So, boo! That stinks. They're not deep, and now they're really exposed because they don't have their point guard.
Yeah, if you don't have a point guard, that is very, very difficult. And I don't know who you turn to right now. I mean, that probably means you can't redshirt a player now. And on top of that, what do you do when you have to shrink the rotation? This was always a problem, and I think Hopkins takes a little bit from Jim Boeheim in this side of things, where it's always a 7-to-8-man rotation. This was always the big problem. If one guy started missing, all of a sudden things would go to you-know-what.
And I would say this. I've accepted the zone. I understand the zone is the best for...
Not
for
cowards.
That the Huskies are going to... I've tried to get over that. It's turned me into a self-hating person, though, because when I watch them lose with the zone, I start to feel like I deserve the pain I'm feeling. Like, where this is what you get with the zone. Like, you might as well just, like, start practicing self-harm, because that's what it was. Obviously, don't practice self-harm, and it's an exaggeration. But, yeah, it makes me feel deep self-loathing. It's Danny and Gallant. Watch the Huskies continue their Bay Area road trip with Cal this weekend. But right now, it's time to get to John Clayton for our morning drive. The professor back in the fold.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They score 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, it seems like Dwayne Brown's going to be out. Mike Iupati, George Fant, doesn't sound very good for those guys either. Do you expect those two to play Sunday?
Yeah, I would admit. Oh, there's no question that Hunt and Fant are going to play, but yeah, the fact that he didn't practice yesterday is not encouraging. I don't know if there's going to be the official rule out today, but you know, Iupati's been fighting that neck injury. I guess had to get a second opinion, so that hurts, because you want the experience, and particularly in a game like this where the weather conditions aren't going to be good. We don't know how bad. I'm worried about trying to be able to make it there. That's going to be the big problem, because I'm flying into Chicago and driving up, and so that's going to be a challenge. But it's going to be a challenge, you know, because they've got some good players in the front seven, and they've got a, you know, now a younger group with Jamarco Jones and maybe George Fant to be able to go out there and try to contain them.
You mentioned the weather, John. The Packers are requesting volunteers to help shovel the stadium out. It's the late game on Sunday. It'll be in the afternoon slot in Pacific time. It sounds like there might be as much as a foot of snow accumulation. Who does that favor?
Not me, but I would have to think it favors Green Bay, because you're home. You've been in that. I mean, you know, the Seahawks, even though, again, they're resilient and can do a lot of different things and are a running team, you know, which right now with questionable ability to run because of the fact that they're down three running backs. But I would have to figure it favors Green Bay, because they'll know the footing. At least better than maybe Seattle, because Seattle's going to have to struggle to see how the footing's going to be. And the one thing I still realize, remember in that Hasselback game, that there's parts of the field, even though there's heating underneath the in the ground, there's still going to be areas that are just kind of dead. And so, because you remember, there's a couple injuries on a kickoff return and all that, and the dead areas where it's just frozen. So, no, I think the advantage would go to the Packers.
Do you have any strategies for coping with this? Well, hand warmers, extra scarf, hot cocoa?
For me?
Yeah.
No, I don't. In fact, I got to go someplace tonight and get a few extra things, because I think I lost a glove last week. So right now I only have one glove. I have to figure out some ways to get my legs warmer and make sure I have enough. Because I usually go in sneakers and all that stuff, Nikes and all. But I got to figure out some better footwear to be able to use.
You might need to get the classic Northwest footwear, which is the Sorel. I would advise extra
socks.
What
is a Sorel?
Sorel is like a rubbery boot. You can get ones that look almost like fashion boots now. Or
can
they're
confirm,
the old school.
Do wear them on the sidelines.
Sorels are fantastic. Okay. I would advise a half size bigger than you normally would to allow for extra socks.
Uh-huh.
Definitely, you got to get another glove, Professor. We can't have you running around with one glove.
No.
Hand warmers. Like the little chemical hand warmers that you kind of break.
Oh, those are the go-to. Yeah,
those
100%.
Things are fantastic, and that'll last for the entire
game.
Yeah,
and I was looking at one thing. It's like you know, some kind of an extra gear that you can kind of put on. Now I have a warm enough thing for the top, you know, as far as my chest and all that stuff. But I probably need to put a little bit something more on the legs and all that stuff. Yeah, I'm gonna have to do some shopping tonight.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, and you might reach out to him, Josh Brown, the former Seahawks kicker. Josh was someone who he put heaters in his pants. He would wear sweatpants on the sidelines, and he would put little battery powered heaters in his pockets. And he got ripped by the Green Bay fans there because he talked about it. But he said it was a very effective strategy. So that could be also something that you inquire about.
Okay, that'll be a thought. But yeah,
John,
it's gonna be a challenge.
Yeah, it is. John, the other game in the NFC, the Vikings going to play the 49ers. How much of a shot do you give the Vikings in this game?
Yeah, I give them a little bit of a shot, because you know they can run the ball. Not the great offensive line. Kirk Cousins is coming off a confidence type of game. And this will be the 49ers' real big first playoff game. So I think that they do have a chance. But, you know, the edge is going to go to San Francisco. I mean, they're the better team. We can't say that necessarily Jimmy Garoppolo is the better quarterback of the two. But at least now, you know, Kirk has won his first game. But, I mean, they do have a chance. And, of course, you know, if they do win and Seattle can somehow pull out a victory in Green Bay, guess where the game's going to be next week?
It's going to be at Seattle.
I know.
Let's go.
That wouldn't be bad.
When you look at the coaches, and you mentioned that, Kyle Shanahan, this is new territory for him. Also, Matt LaFleur as well. Who between those two guys do you think is more suited for this kind of a challenge?
I'd say Kyle Shanahan. Because, Matt, this will be Matt's first game, and not second game, but first really big game like this. And Kyle is just so good as far as what he's been able to put together as far as the running game. His running play calling is as good as I think there's any in football. He's got a good quarterback. He's got a good defense. And I just think that he's put it together right. They're the number one seed. I think the advantage coaching-wise goes to Kyle. And, of course, it's a second generation. I mean, his father, Mike, is so successful with Denver and all that. So, no, I think Kyle has the advantage there.
The other side with the two home teams, I think it's the Titans that might have the better shot this weekend to pull the upset, because I actually think that their approach and that very, very ground-centric offense, if Derrick Henry's able to run, I think they can control the clock. And Lamar Jackson did not play that well last year in the playoffs, and I'm not exactly predicting that Baltimore was the best team in the league during the regular season, but I could see a scenario where the Titans end up pulling off an upset.
I cannot. No, I can't, because the difference is now what's going to happen, because remember, you've seen how good the Ravens' run defense is. They're really good at stopping the run. You got Michael Pierce and you've got Brandon Williams, and they're good up front stopping the run. And then you saw last week, to be able to win that game, they needed 182 yards rushing out of Derrick Henry in a low-scoring type of game, and there was only 8 pass completions by Ryan Tannehill. Well, now you've got Lamar Jackson there, averaging 33 points a game. If it gets into a higher scoring game, I can't see any way Tannehill can keep up with him. So, no, I think the advantage, I think the question is, how long can the Titans stay in the game as opposed to winning the football game?
The other AFC matchup is the Chiefs and the Houston Texans. And for the Texans, we'll see if Will Fuller plays. It seems like he's a huge factor as far as when they're good and when they're bad. Do you buy into the changes, John, that have happened to the Kansas City Chiefs defensively this season? Do you feel that this is actually a plus unit for them now?
Yes, I do. They're so much better. I mean, you can see that Frank Clark has come on with after a slow start. I mean, he had a Pro Bowl year. You can see that they went through a stretch of about 6 games where they gave up less than 10 points a game. Are they great? No, but they're much, much better than last year. Because last year, as good as they were on offense with the 50 touchdown passes by Patrick Mahomes, I thought the defense was going to betray them. Now I think the defense can hold on and hold and do a better job. So, no, I think that this is a much better defense. Steve Spagnuolo's done a great job, and they've added to the defense. Certainly it hurts that they lose their great rookie safety in Juan Thornhill to the ACL, but no, I still think that this is a better team, certainly a better team right now than when they played earlier in the season and Houston won in Kansas City 31-24.
We're now a week and a half after the end of the regular season, and the Cleveland Browns still do not have a coach. Are they getting closer?
Well, Joshy Boy McDaniels got into playing. He got into playing with his wife. And so I got to get the feeling with the wife flying along, wouldn't be surprised if they get a deal done today. Because it's really a matter, does he want to go there? I mean, is he content with the ownership that makes a change every 2 years? Is he happy that Paul D. Podesta, the baseball analytics guy, is still involved in the organization? Because it comes down, I think, at this stage that this is the 8th interview. I think that they're warming up to the idea. If it doesn't work out with Josh, they'll probably go with Jim Schwartz of the Philadelphia Eagles. But no, I think in the end, within the next 24 hours, Joshy Boy will be the head coach of the Browns.
And apparently Josh's agent, who is also the agent for Matt Rhule, Josh was preparing to fly to Carolina at the same time that Matt Rhule's agent, who also represents Josh McDaniels, was finalizing a deal there. Some conflict of interest end up coming and cropping up. That's got to be tough for an agent.
I don't know about any conflict of interest right now with Trace Armstrong, because, Trace was able to get a $62 million deal for Matt Rhule. That was pretty good. And right now he controls it, I think, in Cleveland, because I think Cleveland probably wants Josh McDaniels maybe more than the Browns. He wants the Browns. So, no, I think that Trace has played this really well.
Professor, we always appreciate your time. We want you to stay warm this weekend, and we look forward to catching up with you.
I just hope I can make it to the game.
You'll make it, Professor. This will be like Oregon Trail. You'll a survivalist.
Park the wagon and float.
Ugh, it's going to be tough.
All right, Professor. Thank you very much. Coming up next, Mike Pettine is the defensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. Before that, he was in Cleveland, and he had some... Well, they were surprising comments, not just that he said them, but that he thought it. You'll hear what we have to say about that coming up next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Mike Pettine might be saying, "I'm sorry, Russell Wilson," at the end of Sunday's game. And
I'm sorry, Mr. Wilson.
You are for real. We are the best singers ever. I'm not sure, Danny, how important bulletin board material is in the National Football League. We've seen teams like the New England Patriots be psychotic with it in the past, like saying, "Nobody believes in us," after winning 18 games in a row. But what do I know? What I do know is that when it comes to Russell Wilson, Mike Pettine, who is the Packers defensive coordinator, has had a habit of putting his foot in his mouth.
Being a championship quarterback is not making him win the championship himself. You saw that happen in Seattle. I mean, would you put Russell Wilson in the top 10 in the NFL quarterbacks? No. It's a team sport. They play great defense. The supporting cast around him was tremendous. And he the very first thing he did was he didn't lose games before he went out to win them. And I think that's the key to success. There are some rare quarterbacks that can do that in this league, but there's not that many of them. And if you don't have that guy, don't put yourself in a position where the quarterback has to win the game.
To add a little context to that, that was when Mike Pettine was less than a month on the job as new head coach of the Cleveland Browns. He was at the 2014 NFL Combine and said Russ wasn't even a top 10 quarterback, which was literally a month after Russell Wilson had just won the Super Bowl. So Danny, was Russell Wilson a top 10 quarterback after his Super Bowl victory?
I don't know. You could debate in the media whether he was. A head coach in the NFL certainly should have seen that he was. And when I hear that comment, it makes me think that I would never hire Mike Pettine to be a head coach in the NFL. And I would look at he has no business in player personnel. The guy might be a great defensive mind. Russell Wilson had played 2 years at that point. And for him to say, is Russell Wilson a top 10 quarterback in the league? No, no one was. It's spoken with such a definitive. I was like, well, I certainly don't trust that guy to be able to identify anyone. Like, coach, game should recognize game, right? Like, if you're a smart coach, you should have been able to see it at that point. Even if Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith are spending months debating whether or not he's an elite quarterback, if you're a coach, you should have seen that.
The problem is he's so flippant about it, because I think they're allowed their opinions on quarterbacks.
Of course.
And at that point, I can understand how he might have thought, well, that was actually the defense that carried him there. But to definitively say that he's not in that top 10 conversation when he was 6 in QBR, which was maybe not as accepted then, and 10th in quarterback rating overall, that puts him in the conversation. And by the way, he had just won, I don't know, a Super Bowl. Mike Pettine was not done. So a year later, with his team playing out the string and with him about to get fired, Pettine's Browns had a date with the Seahawks. And before the game, a reporter who had great memory asked Pettine a follow-up question about that very cut that you just heard. And while Pettine gave Wilson a little bit of credit, he was reluctant to call him elite.
He's the perfect quarterback for what they do, and they've done, it's to me it goes both ways. They've also built it around him. Would you put him up there with the guys that can transcend their supporting cast? You know, the Brady's, whether it's Aaron Rodgers, Breeze, Roethlisberger, the ones that you would consider the 2, 3, 4. Elite guys, but no, he certainly played himself into that next tier.
Well, what an idiot. And that's just dumb. He is that guy. He's shown that he was. So what the clips reveal is that Mike Pettine couldn't see that coming. He was not any more attuned or adept at quarterback evaluation than people in the media who spend 5 years debating whether or not so-and-so is elite until they see it. Russell Wilson is elite. Russell Wilson does transcend his supporting cast. He has done it. And Mike Pettine absolutely could not see that coming. And in fact, when he shoved his foot in his mouth and said, no, he's not top 10, then a year later, he's teed up for a mulligan to say that, yeah, that's probably not something I should have said, and I was certainly wrong about that. And he basically says the exact same thing again with softer phrasing.
Right, and look, later that week, he tried to backtrack on SiriusXM satellite radio with Ross Tucker and Booger. This was before the game happened, but then the game took place. The Browns lose 30-13. Russell Wilson finishes the season with the number one quarterback rating in the NFL. He had 34 touchdowns. He had 8 interceptions. Pettine would end up getting fired. We all make bad evaluations. I mean, Mike wasn't exactly the greatest evaluator of quarterbacks.
He's a head coach. He should make better. Because when he goes on Sirius, he says it's not my job to rank quarterbacks.
Right. That's the funniest part of all.
He's kind of right about that. But he's wrong about that, because as a head coach, your job is to identify franchise quarterbacks. Your job is to watch a guy play and say, oh my gosh, that guy could be a franchise changing player. That is your job, is to identify that. And he showed himself like utterly incapable, not only of doing that, but of admitting that he couldn't do that. And then basically saying, well, that's not my job. Yeah, that's disqualifying. He's disqualified as a head coaching candidate.
Oh, you want to disqualify him a little bit further as a head coaching candidate? Well, listen, he has his thoughts on Russell Wilson, even though it's not his job to rank quarterbacks. But when it came to Browns' 2014 first-round pick, Johnny Manziel, oh boy, Mike Pettine was all aboard.
What accompanies him isn't really him. I mean, he's a competitor. He's a great teammate. He loves to get in. He's passionate about football. So I don't think that comes into the building. That we looked at as an opportunity to add a tremendous competitor to this roster. And what follows him for us was not a big factor in the decision.
What do you like about him as a quarterback?
He fits. Ray already referenced it. He fits the play like a Brown mentality. He's tough. He's passionate. I mean, he's a gym rat. He loves football. He can process information very quickly. He can improvise, can make plays with his feet, and I think that's important in today's game.
So he can use coach speak to avoid offering any sort of actual insight. He just chose not to use that sort of vague praising coach speak when it came to Russell Wilson. He can do it. He just chose not to, because honestly, everything he said there, that's what you should say if your franchise chooses a quarterback in the first round. Even if you think the guy stinks, if you're the head coach, you should say that sort of thing. Your job as the head coach, once the team picks him, is to give him the best shot at success. And the best shot at success is trying to build him up as much as you can, at least publicly. But he chose not to do that coach speak against Russell Wilson, which is just sillier.
Twice. If it was just once, okay. And look, Mike Pettine was a consultant with the Seahawks in 2017. It's totally possible that he changed his mind, and he was very defensive of Russell Wilson's past performances at Lambeau Field at his press conference yesterday. But you can't erase history. You can't erase what you said. And even though I know Russell Wilson is Mr. Positive Vibes, and he doesn't need any extra motivation to beat Mike Pettine, seeing as he's 3-0 against him with the Jets, Browns, and Packers, completing 67.5% of his passes with 662 yards, 7 touchdowns, and 0 interceptions. He doesn't need that motivation, but if he's human like us, I hope he takes this one, and I hope he runs with it.
Did you say he was a consultant for the Seahawks?
2017.
Because when you said that, I thought he was a consultant for either went back to the Browns or did something. I hope that the consulting the Seahawks got was to take his opinion and go the absolute opposite direction.
I would hope so as well.
And I definitely, I can rest assured that it wasn't for the offensive side of the football, that his background. There's a great book called Collision Low Crossers, which is about the Rex Ryan Jets. And what's fascinating about it is that the writer, Nicholas Davidoff, got behind the scenes, and you see all of the effort that they put into preparing for it. Pettine was the defensive coordinator on that Jets team. And there's a great sequence where Pettine is basically criticizing Rodgers Cromartie and really going after, Antonio Cromartie. It's Antonio Cromartie, because that was when it was paired with Revis. And Cromartie freaks out and basically refers to him as a high school coach, because that was his background before coming to the NFL.
Listen, when you're a Jet, you're a Jet all the way, from your first cigarette to your last dying day. That's from West Side Story. And sorry, Mike Pettine, that stink, it never goes away. Sweet evaluating, bro. Coming up next, Danny and Gallant, Danny O'Neill, and me, Paul Gallant. Okay, look, we're kind of sick of Aaron Rodgers and his smugness, and Green Bay fans get just as nauseated by Pete Carroll's fatal optimism. But there is one thing we can all agree on, and it relates to a tight end who refuses to block. Don't go anywhere. It's Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Yeah. You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Green Bay and Seattle, a fair amount of history, some friction. They've got a quarterback who has taken at least one slightly veiled shot at Seattle's quarterback. I think there's some legitimate friction between those two, even if they'll never acknowledge it. And in Green Bay, well, their fan base tends to be kind of rubbed the wrong way by Pete Carroll's optimism, and that goes back to the response to the victory on Monday night when Golden Tate caught the pass with one hand before it was secured with two hands by MD Jennings. And apparently people in Green Bay expected Seattle to come out, summarily apologize for having been given the game and offer to return it to Green Bay. So there's some friction. There's one thing we can all agree on, though, and it's that Jimmy Graham is not a great tight end. Rob Domofsky was on with the huddle yesterday, and Rob covers the Packers for ESPN.com, and his assessment of Jimmy Graham, if we don't like Jimmy Graham, it sounds like Green Bay actively loathes him.
Look, I don't think Seahawks fans are going to have to worry about Jimmy Graham. His best days are behind him. Can't run anymore. Doesn't block.
Rob, are you setting us up, man? You're setting us up right here.
No, it's a rope-a-dope.
I can personally attest to the can't block part of it, Rob.
That's true.
Yeah.
We knew
why
that. Are you it's having him block?
It's not just can't block, he won't block. Yeah. Go look at the first play of the game, the Week 17 game. He actually got open for a change, ran down the seam. Rodgers put it right on the money, and he dropped it. Quite honestly, signing him was a mistake, but bringing him back for a second year was a bigger mistake. He has been a absolute non-factor here.
He's always been a tight end that, to me, Danny, has struck me, and I hate to throw this term on anyone because I know that all of these guys are NFL players, but he is about as soft as it gets for tight ends in the NFL, isn't he? I mean, he's essentially a wide receiver, but he comes off as more of a basketball player when he's out there, and I'm not saying that he is essentially James Hardening around out there on the field looking for fouls and flopping and stuff, but he can be easily taken out of a game, and you can do it with a cornerback. That's not a good sign for a guy that's as big as he is, and that was when he was in his prime.
Well, he's a guy, you can't take him out of the game with a cornerback. He's not a tight end. I think, and that's increasingly, he has never been a tight end. He's been a really big wide receiver who's faster than guys who are as big as he is. Like, that's what his skill set was. The problem, and I'll say this forever, the problem in Seattle is that they acquired a Ferrari and then looked to tow a boat with it. I don't think they put him in a position to succeed. Now in Green Bay, it sounds like he doesn't even have the tools to succeed in that position. That he's not the Ferrari anymore. He's the old sports car that needs to be put out in the garage, and you're still trying to drive it around, and everybody's seeing the smoke come back from the exhaust and knows darn well that the thing will not pass emissions.
That's never good. That's never good. Usually get some like tricks to get around that. I had to do that with my 01 Corolla. I was like, listen, do we really want to pay $3,000 to be environmentally safe?
Nah. How did you game the EPA, the emissions testing?
I had a guy.
Dude, that's a very difficult persuasion to get by.
Listen,
I'm sorry, but
I didn't even try to make the persuasion. The guy volunteered to do it, and I was like, okay, sick.
For what?
Nothing really. He just liked.
Nothing or nothing.
Was it the, I swear it was nothing.
Was it the guy at the emissions testing, or was it the guy at the garage next to the emissions?
It was the guy at the garage that was right around the corner from my apartment, who may or may not have been a listener and liked my takes.
There it is.
It's Danny and Gallant. You know what? Shut up, Paul. That's respect on that.
I'm jealous.
Can you imagine a situation in which Nate McMillan had gone out and publicly criticized Sean Kemp in his effort to praise Gary Payton? I can't, and I think anybody that knows those teams can't, but that's basically what happened regarding the Oklahoma City Thunder last night as Russell Westbrook returned to Oklahoma City. And I really wanted to rip on Oklahoma City. Just in general, I want to rip on him any chance I get. But I really wanted to rip on him for welcoming Russell Westbrook, Westbrook back the way they did after he essentially engineered a trade. And then I thought back to how we in Seattle feel about Ken Griffey Jr. and the difference between that and how much we hated Alex Rodriguez when he left. And I realized that, yeah, there's probably a pot kettle sort of situation there if I tried to criticize it. Certain guys get immunity from requesting trades. Here it was Ken Griffey Jr. There it's Russell Westbrook. But the thing that happened on Twitter, and I might be the only person who was eminently entertained by this because I think it shows that that is a town posing as a city and they are very firmly a junior varsity franchise. But there's a Twitter exchange, Paul, between Kendrick Perkins and Kevin Durant.
I did see this. It was very amusing late on a Thursday night.
Starts with Kendrick saying, in 30 minutes, I'm going to give my opinion on SportsCenter on why I believe that Russell Westbrook is the best player to have ever put on an Oklahoma City Thunder jersey. 3 exclamation points. He is Mr. Thunder, all caps, which I think is kind of like being the king of Poop Island, but whatever.
Poop Island? Where's this?
Yes. Well, it's a place that you don't want to be king of. I mean, you're king of something, but it's Poop Island.
Is there a
you're
floating island of turds somewhere?
Yeah, there could be. And if you're anointed king of that, you'd be a king, but it'd be of Poop Island, which is kind of like being Mr. Thunder. Kendrick is challenged and said, look, Durant's the one who was the best. All Russell Westbrook did is once Durant left, get him beat in the first round of the playoffs. Kendrick responds, KD lost in the second round without Russ when I was there. So what does that mean? Question mark. Then Durant chimes in.
Oh,
yeah,
boy.
And our starting center, Kendrick Perkins, averaged a whopping 2-3 during that series. You played hard, though, champ. LOL. Which I was like, man, whenever one player accurately cites another player's statistics, whenever that happens, it is almost certain that somebody is getting a blow straight to the chops. Somebody is getting the business administered to them online.
I don't know if Durant maybe forgot to use his burner account, but props to him for finally coming out into the open as the internet commenter that he truly is.
So that round one, that is a firm, that is Kevin Durant
hit
him square between the eyes.
He didn't even use his burner account.
Yeah. Kendrick
Remember,
says,
he has a burner account.
He does have a burner account.
Several, probably.
He tends to be on the down low with that stuff. Kendrick says, boy, stop. You did the weakest move in NBA history. Up on a team 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals, and then you go join them the following season? Heart of a champion right there. Now that one in the exchange, if Durant hit Perkins straight between the eyes, Perkins just responded with an uppercut that caught Durant flush on the chin. I mean, that goes into his toughness, his competitiveness, and he says what everybody kind of thinks about it, which is Durant pulled a front runner move. Like he took the easy way to a title.
He 100% did. He can't deny it. I don't get why he does. There's no point. And there's no shame in having done it. You want a title out of it. What's to be ashamed of? You want a championship.
And Durant responds, weak is starting at center, playing real minutes with no production. Should have worked on your skills as much as I did. Now, that's a solid response. I think overall Kendrick Perkins is ahead in the exchange. Like, he's still landed the most devastating blow. But Durant's, like, that's pretty good to come straight back to, hey, it was that you didn't try. And then Kendrick Perkins ends it with saying, that's fine. You worked that hard and still had to go join a 73-9 team. Truth be told, you don't even feel like a real champ. You have a hard time sleeping at night, huh? Knowing that you took the coward way out. Who's the winner? You can text in 710-710. Who wins that exchange? I think the real answer is that Seattle wins the exchange because something like that would never happen when we had an NBA franchise because we were a better franchise than that. It's Danny and Gallant. We've got Blue 42 with Michael Bumpus joining us next.